You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
Welcome back. I mean, this is technically our last episode was recorded in 2015, so this is actually our first recording of the new year.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like a year, I'll tell you that much. I don't know, man. 2016, as far as geekdom and fandoms and the movies industry is concerned, and, you know, the music industry as well, has not been a good year so far.
Yeah, and it's been a kind of a rough start. I saw a meme that was like, 2016 brought to you by George R. R. Martin, because freaking everybody's been getting killed off so far.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So
I mean, we lost Bowie, Lemmy, Alan Rickman, the voice, I can't remember his name, but the voice of Robin Hood in the old Disney Robin Hood cartoon.
So, yeah, I don't know.
Han Solo. It's a bad year, man.
Spoiler alert.
Hey, they learned that from the last episode. It's been like a month now. If they haven't seen it by now, you're shit out of luck.
I guess this is a part where we talk about, you know.
So what are we smoking this week, Brad?
Well, so this week we're kind of doing a twofer, I suppose. I mean, we're both smoking the Alec Bradley Tempest, but I have the natural wrapper. You are smoking the Maduro version. So, you know, the natural I have found, I've had a few times. I wanted to do an honest review on this cigar because the, I don't know, five or six that I've had has
You're usually a liar.
Well, I mean, usually when we're doing the reviews, it's things that I've had and I've enjoyed. This is one of the few cigars that, despite the 94 rating, I haven't found myself enjoying as much. It's not as complex, and even though it is a full cigar, it doesn't have some of the peppery notes and stuff that I like typically. So this is going to not be a bashing review, but
I don't know. It may be that the fact that you have been smoking the natural wrapper.
Exactly. You know, because I am more of a, you know, I love the Habano wrappers, the Maduro. And I like things, you know, to have that peppery, almost Lajero profile to it as well. So this one's as complex. So for the natural, you've got the Honduran wrapper. The binder is Honduran with a Honduran and Nicaraguan filler. So
And the Maduro, it's pretty much the same binder and filler, but with a Mexican San Andreas wrapper, which you're seeing a lot of that. Maduro's using the Mexican wrapper lately, and I gotta say, I kind of like it on this. It adds a little bit of a sweetness to the cigar.
Yeah, the San Andreas is kind of grown on me. I don't know. I almost wonder in a way if it's not a marketing gimmick, but I mean, it's
or people have been good, using it before, always using it, and it just now releasing the fact that, oh yeah, this is a Mexican leaf and not, you know, Dominican or Honduran or whatever. It's become okay to admit, you know, that you're Mexican.
Absolutely. So, you know, it's as far as the natural wrapper, I mean, it is a darker wrapper. It just lacks a complexity for me. It's, yeah, I can smoke it. I don't mind smoking it, but I don't, you know, if I'm at a cigar shop or I'm at an event or something, and there's a selection, and I'm spending $10 to $12 per stick, it's not going to be my first pick. But, you know, a lot of people have raved about this cigar.
Well, have you tried the regular Tempest? Because there's actually three. There's the original, the natural, and the Maduro.
I have not tried the original.
I mean, maybe you should try the original. That may be the one that's getting the 94, but I think the that one is also rated 94 as well.
Yes.
But yeah, there may be a difference in that. I can't think the original one's like Nicaragua. I may be mistaken. I've not looked at the details of the original one. The Maduro, though, it's. I mean, I'm picking up notes of coffee, cocoa, you know, little bit of pepper, but not much. And like I said, it's the Maduro is definitely adding just a slight sweetness to it. And it's definitely, you can kind of, it's a full flavored cigar, you know, and so it's got, and it's got, feels like it's got going to have a little bit of a strength to it. And you know, I'm drinking one of our fake Guinness home brews, and I think the cocoa and the sweetness is pairing nicely with the Irish stout.
Yeah, with this one here, I'm getting mostly woody and nutty notes. That's what I'm pulling out of this. I always take a draw of my cigar before I light it. and I will say that, you know, just the original draw before I lit the cigar, it was a blast of pepper. But now that I've lit the cigar, and, you know, it could be that I just need to smoke further down. So when we do our final thoughts, you know, I'll make sure that the oils have been pushed through the leaf evenly, and I will try to be as unbiased as possible.
But I'm honestly, I'm liking this one so far, so you may want to try the Maduro next time you get a chance.
And that's not to necessarily knock the Alec Bradley name. I am a big fan of the Personato. I would like to get that on the mic at some point in an episode. But, you know, for me, it's a cigar. I'm not going to complain too much, but...
But you have.
It's not my favorite.
All right. Also, I want to give a shout-out this week. One of our former guest and friend, Travis Savart, has a podcast called Talk of the Tavern. And they've kind of been on like a 9-month hiatus where they, you know, had some technical difficulties and they're just now getting back up and running. But check them out. It's kind of interesting because it's a, not just a podcast, but it's a live internet radio show. You know, they have like a Facebook page where you can kind of comment and interact with the show while they're, I think they broadcast on Mondays at 8. If you go to their website, talkofthetavern.com, and you can find links of where to listen to the show and stuff and give them a check out.
And you want to go ahead and tell the folks, give the precursor as to what this episode is going to entail?
This week we're talking about the man, the myth, the legend, the great Samuel L. Jackson.
So we figured, you know, with the release of The Hateful Eight, what better time than, you know, to go ahead and put Sam Jackson back in the limelight a little bit.
And let me go ahead and pre-warn you. I mean, normally we tag this show explicit lyrics, but as we're talking about Samuel L. Jackson, it's impossible to quote Samuel L. Jackson lines without including his signature foul language. So just be warned. There may be more cussing than normal on this episode. And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned. Yo, here we go. Start the mission. A head-on collision. But amping up a story that was played on television. What? We got what everybody's after. Hollywood's fully automatic soul master. Yeah, here he comes. Got love and he likes the machine gun. Yo, you better check your mirror.
And welcome to back to the Cigar Nerd Podcast. Oh, you ready to talk about the man, the myth, the legend, Sam Leroy Jackson?
Absolutely.
Or is, I mean,
I'm just going to throw it out there. You know, the bad motherfucker. Like,
yep.
that sums up everything I could ever say about Sam Jackson. And I just,
how many wallets were sold because of Pulp Fiction?
You know, I have fact went to wallet. The
which
know,
one is it? The one that says bad motherfucker?
The Pulp Fiction store, and that was one of the Christmas presents I got one year, was the bad motherfucker wallet. Actually had like an insert, you know, that had the quote, the verse that he quotes throughout the film, as well as like a mocked up driver's license. Like, so it was rather interesting.
I mean, just going through, looking at his like IMDb page, I mean, the guy has been in everything. I mean, he's been active since the 70s, and I mean, even this, I mean, within the next year, I think he's got like 5 or 6 credits of stuff that's going to be released in the next year. So he's not slowing down any.
No, not at all. I mean, it, you know, and Yeah, there's a lot of big blockbuster films that we could throw out there, but I mean, he's got hundreds and hundreds of credits to his name as, you know, just voice acting stuff and animated characters that he's did.
I mean, it's like, how was it, that last Ted movie that came out, when they're talking about Samuel Jackson, he's like, you don't know who Samuel Jackson is? He's like, have you seen a movie, The Black Guy? That's him. Like, basically, he's like in every movie.
But wait, would that be Sam Jackson or is that Morgan Freeman? Like, I don't know.
No, he always gets mistaken for Lawrence Fishburne, apparently.
Yeah, there's a Funny or Die clip circulating around YouTube that is absolutely hilarious. Yeah,
it's called like It's Samuel Jackson's Fault or something, where everybody blames him.
Yeah, all the parents, you know, basically blame their kid's bad behavior on quotes and characters that he's portrayed through films. Like, it brings up a valid point. Like, you know, as a parent, do you not check the ratings or, you know, the content or, you know, like, that's a cop out just for being a shitty parent in most instances.
I think there's one in there that's funny because there's like an Asian guy that's dressed just like his character from Jackie Brown. And he's like, my son has crappy fashion sense because your character is Jackie Brown. And that dude's dressed like just like him.
So, you know, it's crazy to think, man. But
I mean, we've
67
about...
years old, and the dude looks, you know, freaking younger than you and I. Like, I mean,
he is like a comedian, because, like, so you see him in I mean, he looks, you know, better than I do. And then he'll do a movie like Black Snake Moan or even Django or Hateful Eight, where he looks like an old man. And then next day you see him, he looks like he's 40.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, you know, I saw him in the Hateful Eight, and I was like, no, he does not look like that old in real life, and it's just because, you know, the effects and the makeup and stuff is just so good. But, you know, it's crazy because I always, you know, hell, in my head, he's still in his 40s. Like, yeah. I mean, that's...
The dude is immortal. He's looked the same in, like, every movie I've seen him in. And, I mean, he's in so many movies that we've talked about several... movies on the podcast that, you know, we talked about the
Avengers.
You
can't talk
and
about
stuff.
Tarantino without talking, yeah, we've
talked
Sam
about
Jackson.
We've even talked about Jurassic Park. So we're not gonna spend a whole lot of time talking about those, but yeah, we will talk about his character a little bit more in depth. But let's start with the latest, possibly the greatest rendition of Samuel Jackson, Tarantino's new Hateful Eight.
Yeah, I gotta say, you know, seeing the role that he played in Django and now going to the Hateful Eight, you know, it was kind of interesting. Like, he's very low key. Like, I mean, he's still a badass, but he's not like, I've been shot in the nuts and crippled up and I'm still gonna take you down, badass. Like, so he kind of goes through a progression. Yeah. Spoiler!
I mean, this is the second. Tarantino does not do sequels. I mean, he's never done any kind of sequel, but this movie is kind of in that same Western style that Django was. So it's like the closest thing he's ever done to doing a sequel.
Yeah, and well, I mean, this film almost came, you know, when they originally started production. Like, it got leaked on the internet like a year into it, and Tarantino shut the production down. And
yeah. And that's kind of how one of the, if you're a fan of Justified or Walter Coggins plays a sheriff in this movie, and he kind of got the role because when the movie was leaked and Quentin decided he wasn't going to do it, he decided to do like a live reading at some theater of the script, and I guess that part hadn't been cast yet, and then Walter Coggins came in to read that part for the theater performance, and Quentin was like, friggin' this dude gets the part.
I don't know, you know, I mean, kind of going on a little bit of a tangent, getting off in the weeds a little bit here, but I really like the way that Hateful Eight was shot. I mean, it very much had that old school Western film. Like, I wish I could have saw one of the Roadshow editions where they showed it in true 70mm format.
Yeah, because, I mean, you haven't seen a movie, and, I mean, he had to go out and find cameras that were ancient that and trying to find people that knew how to use them to shoot it in that true 70mm. And even the actors that I've seen in interviews was like, we had to kind of like relearn how to act, because normally on a 35mm there's scenes where we would have been off camera, but we're still the shot is so wide that you're there really is no off camera. So you have to be in character all the time, even when the action isn't focused on you, because you're still going to be on screen.
Yeah, that's one of the things, like, I guess getting into film production and stuff like that, that me as a viewer, I don't oftentimes take into account. Like, you know, I guess movie making these days is not like movie making where, oh, you're in this one scene and the rest of the time you can just kind of chill out behind the scenes a little bit. Like, now it's, you know, no, this is a living, breathing scene. Like, you are here for the entire duration. Like,
and especially the outdoor scenes in the movie. With that 70 millimeter, there was so much depth to the visual that, I mean, it. No other way to say it than just epic. Just to seeing like the mountain scenes, and I mean, even the close up of the horses like galloping in the snow. I mean it was not like anything I'd seen before in at least current cinema. I mean, it was very artistic.
Absolutely, and I don't know. I mean, we're kind of getting off on a tangent here. But, I mean, you know, Sam Jackson's character in this film, you know, was just awesome. The film really kind of grew on me. Like, at first I watched it, and I really felt like I was watching an old Western. I mean, it truly had that impact. Like you said, you know, you're looking at the horses, the way that the blizzard scenes and stuff
Major
like that.
Marcus Warren, a former Civil War our Union soldier.
Yeah, this film, I think, was it was kind of slow. Like, it was weird. Like, there was one pivotal moment, and like the whole film shifted. Like, at the first, I feel like I'm watching an old Western, and then in one scene, I'm like, oh shit, here's where Tarantino's about to go balls to the wall.
Yeah, because like when I sat down to watch, I'm like, oh, this is like a 3-hour movie. I'm like, okay, maybe I'll watch like an hour of it and then take a nap and come back, watch the rest of it. But it was like, once the flip happened, I'm like, all right, I'm hooked. I sent it, and, you know, tuning in for the whole thing. Because like the first third of the movie, probably, or if not more, that it's them all snowed in together in a cabin, I guess you would call it. But it just kind of built that tension, that claustrophobia of, like I said, the, you know, once they get to the cabin, the rest of the movie takes place in the cabin. They never leave that cabin. And it, like I said, it just kind of just the tension just keeps ratcheting up. Because,
well,
yeah,
I mean,
no one trusts anybody. It's like a bunch of, you know, Kurt Russell's character is a bounty hunter as well as Samuel Jackson's. And Kurt has this prisoner who's worth like $10,000. And he pretty much expects everyone is trying to take his bounty. And the only person he sort of trusts is like Sam Jackson, because Sam's got his own bounty, and he's like, all right,
yeah, I mean,
he's,
yeah,
I'll protect
got,
your
like,
money, you protect my money,
you know, $8,000 of, you know, collateral sitting on top of the roof of the wagon, like,
yeah. But, you know, all of Sam's people are dead, because, you know, Sam's like, it's a whole lot easier to transport dead people than it is live people. Kurt Russell wants to do it the hard way. He wants everybody to hang.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that comes out to, wasn't he a hangman at some point himself?
I think that was just like the nickname they gave him, because when he captured him, they always make it to the hangman. But, you know, everyone else, if the
court
says dead or alive, they bring him in dead because it's safer.
Oh, yeah, I remember the quote now, because basically he's talking about, you know, giving somebody a bullet is the easy way out. But, you know, them hanging, their neck snapping and everything, that's justified for, you know, the
what the crimes they committed, and
and
I think Kurt Russell even says, like, I want to make sure the hangman gets his, you know, his pay too.
That's good looking out, you know, good entrepreneurial mindset there. Yeah. You know, I mean, just
looking out for the small businessman.
We call this trickle down economics. But no, I thoroughly enjoyed the film. It was, you know, very interesting seeing Sam Jackson, like, especially once the hat comes off. Like, while he's in, you know, the hat, like, I kind of feel like, you know, Django Unchained a little bit. Like, that's kind of how I perceive him in age. But then the hat comes off, and, you know, he's basically got the, you know, toilet bowl hairline thing going on and everything. I mean, he truly looks like an old man at that point.
Yeah, and Jennifer Jason Leigh as the criminal that they're trying to get to the hangman. I mean, that was a brilliant part. She gets the like shit kicked out of her through most of the movie.
Many times.
She like, it seems like she enjoys it. I mean, she just keeps like fucking with it.
Oh, she's
like,
a sadistic shit out of her. Bitch. Yeah. I mean, that's all there is to it. I mean, this girl is straight up, you know, sadistic. And I mean, that's the thing. Like, you eventually find out she's the leader of a gang and some other stuff. But I mean, one of the scenes that sticks out in my hand is when Sam Jackson, her character, and you know, the hangman, essentially, and they're all in the freaking yes. carriage. Anyway, like,
yeah, the hangman keeps just knocking the shit out every time yeah. he like speaks.
Well, but you know, the part where she spits on the Abe Lincoln letter. And that's Sam like, Jackson cold cocks her, and she's handcuffed.
It's so hard she falls out of the carriage and like drags Kurt Russell with her.
Yes. It's like, you know, Kurt Russell gets up like, motherfucker, you almost ripped my arm off too. Like,
yeah, because up until that point, Sam had kind of been like, you know, all right, you know, maybe.
Halfway joking with yeah, her, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe this girl's getting a bad rap, you know, like, you know, maybe you shouldn't be like smacking her around so hard. And then he pulls out this letter that he supposedly got from like Lincoln. And she spits on it, and he just punches, like, freaking cold cocks her.
So, yeah, there were some pretty funny moments.
And, I mean, Sam, one thing about Sam Jackson, ever since, I go all the way back to Pulp Fiction, is the man knows how to monologue. I mean, especially in a Quentin movie, but he's kind of known for these long, like, badass monologues where he's like threatening somebody or rallying the troops or whatnot. And in this movie, it's one of the darkest Sam Jackson monologues, because when they get to the cabin, you know, like I said, he's a former Union soldier who has like a big bounty on his head from the South. And there's an old Southern general in there who apparently had killed a bunch of black soldiers and stuff instead of, So Sam immediately wants to kill him, but they're like, the sheriff's like, nope, I know you're a bounty hunter. This man doesn't have any warrants on him. You kill him, you'll be the one on the hangman for this. So,
yep, that's murder.
So Sam, you know, starts being nice to the guy, brings him soup, starts talking to him. And then like, because you know, the guy's apparently looking for his son who has disappeared. He's like, oh, I met your boy. He's like, really? He's like, yeah, yeah. He just like takes his gun out of his belt and just lays it on the table next to the general.
Or sets it on his armchair. Like
the, yeah, there's like the a little like end table or yep. something like that. And he sets it next to him and then proceeds to tell him in the most graphic way how he killed his son and just talks the guy into finally like reaching for the pistol and trying to shoot him so he can be justified in killing him. And it's, I mean, it is like, yeah, probably that was a 15-minute monologue brutal, yeah. that is just brutal.
Yeah, that was quite. I didn't see that. You know, like, you know, you almost felt like Sam at some point is trying to be genuine and level yeah. with him. Like, you know, like, hey, I understand you're a racist bigot and all that, but we shared a battlefield, so you're going to deny me that too. And you know, the general's like, well, no, I can't. So. You know, sit down, say what you got to say, and
yeah, and I mean,
that's
and,
one guy you don't want to piss off. Like, I don't know, man. You know, so many of Sam Jackson's characters is like, I'd love to sit down and have a beer with you, but goddamn, I don't want to be on your bad side. No,
like if you're his buddy in a movie, yeah, he's got your back. But yeah, if you're on his bad side, you don't want that the monologue directed at you.
No, like. You start questioning me about Marcellus Wallace and some other, like.
Yeah. What did your son look
again,
like?
Motherfucker?
Did he look like a bitch? Oh, like I said, if you haven't seen Hateful Eight yet, you've got to see that. yeah, because I mean, from all the trailers, you think Kurt Russell is the star of this movie, but no, this is definitely Sam Jackson's movie.
I don't know. I felt like there was a good balance. You know, I mean,
I'd say like at least the first half of the movie is definitely Kurt Russell's show. And like, I haven't seen Kurt Russell in anything in a while. And like I said, I like seeing him back on the screen. I mean, hell, I'd like to see a sequel to Big Trouble in Little Chinatown.
Yeah. I don't know, with all the reboots and sequels and everything.
That's a rumor they're going to reboot that, but I've not heard any new news on that since I heard that rumor. And yeah, a lot of like. This movie, I mean, if this turns out to be Quentin's last movie, I mean, this was kind of like his shout out to everyone he's ever worked with. There's so many former, you know, Quentin alums in this movie. Tim Roth, who, if you remember him from Pulp Fiction, he was the guy that held up the English guy that holds up the diner.
The diner.
That
ends up stealing
Sam's wallet. yeah, he's in it as the hangman. Michael Madsen's in it, who has been in a bunch of Quentin movies, all the way back to friggin' Reservoir Dogs. Even what's her name, Zoe Bell from Grindhouse movies is in it. She's basically been the stunt woman in most of Quentin's. I mean, she was the stunt double in Kill Bill and like a ton of other Quentin projects.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing. I don't know. There's something about that the Quentin Sam Jackson duo there that I don't know. Like every manly thing I can think of, like basically revolves around those two characters. So I guess that's why. You know, Sam Jackson, in my eyes, is always so iconic of a character. I mean, you know that if Sam Jackson is in something, you're going to get a quality production out of it. Like, I can't.
Like I said, I guess, like, him being in these Quentin projects, that's where kind of his great monologuing kind of all started, or at least as far as I know. Because, I mean, everyone remembers Jules' speech from Pulp Fiction, where it's like, you know, my name is the Lord. I lay my vengeance upon thee.
Yep. And I mean, so many of the other good quotes that came out of that film, too. I mean,
I am supercharged TNT. I am the guns of the Navarone. I'm a mushroom cloud laying motherfucker.
Yes.
Which seeing Yoda say that is hilarious. That's another thing you got to look up if you're looking up Sam Jackson stuff is Pulp Wars, where they've re-edited all the scenes from Empire Strikes Back with Yoda and replaced his dialogue with Pulp Fiction quotes. And there's another one, I think it's like Sam Vader or something, where they did the same thing with Darth Vader using Sam Jackson quotes. I think one of my favorite parts is that where he's like, it's the scene where they're on the Death Star with all the Imperial generals and that one guy, you know, makes fun of him for believing in the Force and he starts force choking him and he's like, oh, did I break your concentration?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely been some great montages and, you know, some shout outs. And, you know, I mean, I don't know. You know, I guess that's one thing that as a person, I love watching Sam Jackson, especially because he's not afraid to touch base on, like, any of these real sensitive issues, like, especially when it comes to race. Like, he will flat out put somebody on the spot and be like,
oh, yeah.
Who was it he was doing the interview with?
It was some like morning show interview or something like that. But the guy was trying to ask about all the racial slurs that were in Django Unchained, and he was like, "Say it." And he's like, "He's like, no, I'm not going to answer the question unless you actually say the word."
Yeah. So
and just like got like you know, he's like, "No, I'm like until you say it, I'm not going to answer any questions about that subject."
And, you know, I think. I don't know. I mean, we play some very unpolitically correct games, and I mean, you know, we're not necessarily the most politically correct, but we're also not bigoted racist assholes either. So, you know, I do think that, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, Sam Jackson brings to the table is he kind of forces people to get outside their comfort zones a little bit. I mean, you know, even in the films like Pulp Fiction and stuff like that, yeah, like there's a lot of brutal violence and stuff, but I mean, the entire time you're rooting for Sam Jackson.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that's one thing. He plays such a great character that
even if he's the bad guy, yes, you still want him to
that's
win.
What I was trying to get to. I mean, he's played a lot of heroes, but when he plays a bad guy, it's even better. Like, for example, let's talk about another movie real quick. The Kingsman, which is it's kind of where he plays the traditional Bond villain. Valentine is his name.
Yep.
And, oh, he is so, such a... He's so quirky because he's like this billionaire. He's kind of like the Elon Musk of this universe where he's like a super rich guy who's supposedly trying to give free cell phones to the world, but... secretly, he has a plan to say it's like a go green. Basically, he's going to wipe out like half the world's population to be able to save the environment. It's like an extreme environmentalism plot. Like, it sounds like some kind of weird thing that
damn eco-terrorist
a Bond villain would do. But He's phobic of the sight of blood. Like, anytime one of his henchmen kills somebody, he like almost throws up because he hates the sight of blood.
It's almost hard to be a villain and, you know, well, I don't know. I mean, I guess if you're the type of villain that can be up in a tower somewhere and, like, I guess, like, you would think, like, they really go back to 1930 gangsters where, you know, you're just up in a tower, you have all your henchmen handling the dirty work, and, you know, you're just basically acting like the front for legit.
I mean, that's what you see, like, most Bond villains, too. I mean, they've got their, you know, odd job. You don't see a Goldfinger capping somebody. You know, he's got people to do that for him. And, I mean, and in that movie, Sam Jackson had, like, a ninja girl with sword legs.
So shout out to the OGs and the shot collars.
Yeah. Oh, but yeah, that Kingsman movie was so good. Just the, especially that scene where they're testing their weapon in a, like, a church. It's basically like a hyped up version of the Baptist, whatever, Westboro Baptist Church, which is like these super, you know, racist, like, church guys. And he sets off basically the cell phones set on a signal that turns everybody into, like, psychos. So they all start, like, just killing each other. And the hero of the movie, played by Colin Firth, is in there, and he's wearing these, you know, spy glasses that have cameras. So you're seeing this whole, like, first-person perspective of him, like, just fucking everybody up, and it's like the most video game scene in the movie.
Yeah, I don't know. Shout out to Google Glass, and I saw that they got some competition coming down the pipeline that looks like it's going to be pretty impressive, so that might be something for another science article at some point.
Yeah, Google Glass makes you look at dork.
Yeah.
But this other stuff looks like regular glasses, yeah. But it still has the technology, so that may catch on a little quicker than the Google Glass did. Google Glass has kind of just been, you know, put to the realm of hipsters. There's nobody else wants to wear those damn things.
And even the hipsters are not necessarily sold on the idea.
What's some other good Sam Jackson bad guys that you can remember?
Oh, I don't know. You know, I don't necessarily know about back, but Jackie Brown comes to mind. Like, I mean, you know, he's just straight up, you know, straight hood. And
yeah, he's like the gangster guy, you know, the drug dealer or whatever. And
I mean, that's a very iconic role when I think, you know, older Sam Jackson films. Like,
yeah, we've talked about Jackie Brown before. Or I wouldn't call him the bad guy. Well, I mean, he was the kind of the bad guy in RoboCop, sort of. You know, he was the guy who built in the rebooted RoboCop, you know, but not, I mean, he was kind of a, not like a huge part in that, well, going back to Django, where he was like the slave master's, like, you know,
right-hand man. Yeah.
Where it's like, it's one of the few times you're like, Sam's kind of a dick in this one, but
not kind of, absolutely just, is. I mean,
the character was just so rememberable.
Yeah, I mean, it was very iconic, you know, and I think we talked about in a previous episode how, like, a lot of the actors and actresses, you know, in that film were hesitant about some of the strong dialogue, and, you know, once again, you know, Samuel L. Jackson just basically, violence. You know, steps up and says, oh, hell nah, like, we're going in this, you know.
Yeah, it's okay with me, it's okay with all y'all, yeah. So let's do that. Or, kind of a silly sci-fi movie that I didn't watch it that came out in video, but it was worth watching. Jumper, where he was like the main bad guy that was trying to hunt down the, you know, the people with powers and take them out. I mean, he was kind of cool as the antagonist in that.
Yeah, and I don't know, you know, not really, not a bad guy, and kind of switching gears a little bit, but, you know, to kind of get back to our core geekdom and fandom, I mean, him as Nick Fury is fucking awesome. Like, I think of Fury being such a badass and everything, and...
Yeah, I mean, because in the, you know, the original Nick Fury was kind of a white guy with, you know, kind of gray in hair and stuff, but when Marvel changed to, they came out with this, they called the Ultimate Series, you know, Ultimate Avengers, Ultimate Spider-Man, and that, you know, alternative universe, they actually got Sam Jackson's permission because they wanted the new Ultimate Universe Nick Fury to look like Sam Jackson. So, like, the comic book was originally based on him, and then, like, when became the Marvel Cinematic Universe, they're like, well, we've based this character on Sam for all these years. Let's, you know, make Sam the cinematic version of that. And it was, I mean, that was probably one of the highlights of the first Iron Man movie, because at that point, we didn't know anything about there being a plan for a Marvel Cinematic Universe. We thought, yeah, cool, we're getting an Iron Man movie, and that's, you know, all we thought we were getting.
Yep.
And then you get that post-credit scene where Nick Fury walks in, and you're like, I am Iron Man. Yes. he's like, I'm here to talk to you about the Avengers Initiative.
Yeah, I mean, and that's one of the cool things about Sam Jackson. I mean, up until, you know, The Force Awakens and, you know, with its huge success, you know, up until Harrison Ford just recently took the role of highest grossing actor, you know, that title was held by Sam Jackson forever.
Probably because he's been in everything.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. But, I mean, still, like, you know, that's...
But pretty much he's showed up in... I think just about every Marvel movie, except for maybe the last Thor movie, I think is the only thing that I don't... And he wasn't in Ant-Man. But other than that, I mean, that dude has been in at least every single movie.
You know, I have so much respect for him because he's been in a lot of these small films that, you know, Pulp Fiction, before it reached its cult status, like, it wasn't, you know, record-breaking. So, you know, he's put in the time, the work, the effort. He hasn't just been, like, one actor or, you know, okay, I'm going to be in this one film, and it's going to make my career, and then I'm going to fall off the radar.
And that's the thing, like, it seems like he's willing to do just about anything, too, regardless. Because he'll do something that's very dramatic, like, and then, you know, the next movie up is some kind of crazy comedy or big sci-fi movie. I mean, the dude looks like he's willing to, if it's a good script, he will do, you know, anything.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, you know, here being in the Atlanta area and everything, I thought it was kind of cool that, you know, his alma mater was Morehouse College.
Yeah. I mean, that's in, you know, he's showed up in a lot of Falcons commercials.
Yeah. So. I mean, that's the thing. Like, it's like, oh, shit.
Yeah, and speaking of geekdom, Samuel Jackson is Mace Windu.
Yeah, I mean, from the Star Wars. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know. And then, you know, Frank from Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. So, you know, switching over to video games, yeah. You know.
I mean, let's talk about, you know, Mace Windu for a second, though, too. I mean, in the first movie, he's not the typical Sam Jackson. I mean, he's very subdued because he is pretty much second in command of the Jedi Order. I mean, he's very, like, I don't know, spiritual or Zen and stuff. And then you finally see him in the second movie where he goes to rescue Obi-Wan and, like, oh, I get it. Freaking Mace Windu is a badass. He freaking chops off, you know, Jango's head and gets into some shit. And it's great, too, because, I mean, he's the only guy in the Star Wars universe with a purple lightsaber. And I've seen interviews where he's like, yeah, he first got cast, he was, like, talking to Luke. He's like, I want a purple lightsaber. And Luke's like, well, all the, you know, Jedi lightsabers are either green or white or green or blue or something like that. He's like, yeah, I know. I want a purple lightsaber. Yeah. And sure enough, Sam Jackson gets his purple lightsaber because he is a bad motherfucker. Hand me my lightsaber. It's the one that says bad motherfucker.
Yeah, I don't know, you know, I mean, just the fact, I mean, and it's cool because, you know, whether Sam Adams playing a gangster, whether he's, you know, doing the Mace Windu, like, you always see him, you know, develop into a leadership role, and that's very much, you know, with Mace Windu leading the, you know, 212 Jedi at the Battle of Geonosis and, you know, basically taking out Jango Fett and... So sets.
And it gets taken out by Jango Unchained later.
Yeah. Like, I wonder, was that intentional? Like,
oh. Yeah, I mean, he does stuff like Black Snake Moan, which is, you know, probably is one of his most dramatic roles. And then he'll go do something like Snakes on a Plane. Yeah. which that movie is just, I mean, it's.
It's cheesy. It's,
when they come to you and say, we have this script, it's called Snakes on a Plane, you'd be like, I'm in. Because this sounds like something that's just fucked up enough that I've got to be a part of it. This is going to be hilarious. Have you seen Snakes on a Plane?
Yes. I mean, it's hilarious.
when the Chihuahua gets eaten by the Anaconda.
That hurt my heart a little, to be honest with you. I love dogs.
Oh, and just like, yeah, his famous line, too. How many times have that been, like, parodied in other things, or memes and stuff? I mean, I've seen one where they had, like, a whole bunch of, whatever, Professor Snapes, and he's like, I'm tired of these motherfucking Snapes on this one.
Wait, too soon? Too soon. Too soon.
Oh. But, well, speaking of Snape, who, you know, played Hans Gruber in the original Die Hard, Sam was even in a Die Hard movie. Die Hard 3, Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Yeah, I was trying to, like, that was Die Hard with a Vengeance. Like, I was thinking of it, and like, wait a second, I don't want to fuck up, man.
Which, I mean, that one, probably... other than the original, has been my favorite Die Hard movie. Because, I mean, it kind of turned the Die Hard franchise into a buddy cop film. You know, because up until that point, it had just been Bruce Willis on his own. And, you know, since then, it's kind of, even in the next movie where you teamed up with Justin Long, you know, it's kind of turned that series into a buddy cop film. And, like, Sam Jackson's, like, just over the top anger paired with Bruce Willis's like I don't give a shit attitude. Just
I mean it's a meshing so and it works so well together. But yeah, I mean that's the thing. I don't know. I think without that turnaround, I don't know that the Die Hard franchise would.
Yeah, because Die Hard 2 did not get the greatest reception. Yeah, because it's like, you know, the first one had that great claustrophobic feel, and the second one was just kind of like all over the map. But yeah, that third one. Yeah, even though they were kind of all over the city, but with the limitations they were put on where they can't use public transit and they're having to follow all these rules to keep the bombs from going off, just kind of gave it that claustrophobic feel, but still, you know, in the big city.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. I just think it's crazy that on average he grosses, you know, $68.2 million per film that he does. That's just crazy. Like... I could do this, like, 1 3-hour film, and I'm set for life, ultimately. Like, how does that... God, it's just mind-blowing to me.
We should have got degrees in drama instead of criminal justice.
Oops.
Definitely would have been more profitable.
But, yeah, I don't know, man. It's just so awesome. I mean...
So what's the first Sam Jackson role that you remember seeing?
The first real one I want to say is going to be probably Jurassic Park. That's one that...
Hold on to your butts.
You know, really stood out. You know, then Pulp Fiction really put him on the map for me. So that started me going back and watching Patriot Games, Jungle Fever, you know, and some of the older stuff.
Yeah, because I never really saw any of those, you know, old Spike Lee movies beforehand. But I think the very first thing I saw Sam Jackson in was a comedy called Loaded Weapon. National Lampoon's Loaded Weapon. And this was like... It was kind of like when, you know, parody movies started getting big again.
Can you educate me? Because I didn't even know there was a National Lampoon Loaded Weapon. So
basically, it was like in the time of like right after Lethal Weapon, where buddy cop movies were starting to get huge, and it was, you know, making fun of, you know, the buddy cop series. It was basically a comedy version of Lethal Weapon with Samuel Jackson playing the Danny Glover Sergeant Murtaugh role. And what's his name? Emilio Estevez was kind of the Mel Gibson in that movie. And it was just like typical.
So did it have the you know, humor that I know National Lampoon to be?
Yeah, pretty much.
Days,
it's just a slapsticky, you know, kind of like Loaded Weapon or not Loaded Weapon, a Lethal Weapon. Oh, fuck. What's the ones with Police Files?
Oh shit!
Naked Gun.
Naked Gun.
Yeah, that same kind of just slapsticky. Comedy. His character was named Wes Luger.
So I am missing out by not seeing this film.
Well,
so don't go into too much detail because I don't want it to be ruined for me. Like,
yeah, like I said, he goes from doing these, you know, Spike Lee you know, kind of dramas to just a run of like weird comedies.
But I think that's a you know, a definite credit to the versatility of the, you know, types of characters that he's able to portray. I mean, you know, so that very much speaks to, you know, his acting skills. And like you said, you know, he's, I don't know, like when he does a monologue or something, like to me it almost has the same effect as like a Morgan Freeman or something. Yeah. Like when, you know, he's delivering one of his big speeches. I don't know. Can we get an Independence Day with a with Samuel Jackson in there? Like, I'm sick of these motherfucking aliens.
I mean, and we talked about Pulp Fiction when we did our Quentin Tarantino episode, but let's talk about his character for a second, Jules, because that's probably a lot of people's like first, like you said, he really blew up after that, and like so that whole speech he does is so famous. But then the whole like after they. Yeah, after that scene where he's like, you know, wanting to give up being a gangster, and he's like, I'm just gonna, you know,
I'm gonna go through this transition period.
Yeah, he's like, I think I'm gonna, you know, just travel the world like Kane and Kung Fu. And he's like, what? You're gonna be a bum? He's like, no, man, I'm gonna, you know, pass out wisdom and get in adventures and stuff. Like, I know Quentin never does a sequel, but that was like the movie I wanted to see was Jules's adventures as he roams, and that would have been an awesome TV series, just. Kind of like a Kung Fu reboot, just Jules traveling the world, getting into doing adventures and stuff, and but, passing out like Jedi-style wisdom.
But could that be a TV series? I don't know. I mean, he goes through his transitional period, so, you know, maybe
each week he's in a different location, getting into some kind of different... you know, kind of like if you ever watched the old like Kung Fu series, basically...
So instead of...
he would show up in a town, get into some kind of shit, and then... leave by walking off, and then the next episode he's in a whole another town going on another adventure. And
so we and instead of the new Run DMC show on the Travel Channel where it's basically him traveling the world with his family and stuff like that, we should, you know, the life and adventures of one Samuel L. Jackson. Like,
no, I just want to see Jules from Pulp Fiction traveling the world and getting into adventures.
I would like to see him traveling in today's world, you know, the big fro, the whole nine yards. I mean, just old school.
and you'd like end every episode by giving that whole like, you'll know my name is Lord when I lay my vengeance upon you speech as he takes out bad guys and stuff.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, I think before Pulp Fiction, before the Ezekiel verse, you didn't have a whole lot of films taking Bible quotes and, you know, passages. Out of reference. Like, can you think of a film prior to that? Like,
no.
After Pulp Fiction, you started seeing people do that quite a bit. But, you know, prior to that, like, I almost felt like it was one of those, like, taboo topics. Like, you just didn't do it. And
especially, like, yeah, quoting it before you kill a man. Just because I just thought it was some cold shit to say to a dude before I killed him. Yeah. But now I think I am the shepherd leading through the valley. I'm trying real hard to be the righteous man.
So, I don't know. I think that's one thing that really helped with the Pulp Fiction dynamic is, you know, him transitioning from, you know, kind of cold, heartless gangster to, you know what, I'm going to give humanity a chance and I'm going to try to bring some good to the world.
And he's not even, he's, you know, not afraid to make fun of that image of the... of the epic monologuer. Like, talk about Deep Blue Sea for a second. That scene in Deep Blue Sea where he starts telling this story about how they were like trapped in like a snowstorm or something. And, you know, he's like, you know, nature's, you know, a killer, but nothing compared to man. And he's starting to give that big, like Sam Jackson speech to rally the troops where you're like, oh yeah, he's pissed off now. There's about to be some ass kicking. Nope. Shark takes him out. It's just out of nowhere. You're like, holy crap. How does Sam Jackson die in a movie?
I mean, I'm thinking Sam Jackson should probably stick to the tropics. Like, Deep Blue Sea in the winter storm. You had the Hateful Eight in the winter storm. Like, the winter months are not good for Sam Jackson.
But, I mean, that scene, I mean, it was so shocking because you don't expect Samuel Jackson to die in a movie. And then right when he's doing that, like, you know, we're going to kick some ass speech, freaking shark takes him out. And after that, you're like, oh, damn, the rules are off. Everybody can die in this thing.
I mean, you know, and... Hateful Eight, I think, was almost a throwback to that because that one pivotal scene, that's kind of what it felt like because he's up there, you know, just piecing together the puzzles, and he's about to own every motherfucker.
And it's going like, all right, this is what really happened. You know, y'all think y'all smart. You know, I've done figured out every single thing here. This is what, you know, this happened and this happened and this happened. And then you get shot in the nuts by G.I. Joe.
And there goes my nuts.
But I don't kill him because he's a bad one.
It crips him up a little bit, but he lays on that bed and he still owns motherfuckers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Freaking Channing Tatum.
Yeah. And it was funny. Out of all of the characters, it was Channing Tatum that fucks him over.
Yeah, when you see Channing Tatum, you're like, what the hell is Channing Tatum doing in this movie? It was just so, like, out there for a second. I'm like, the hell?
Yeah, but up until, like, they did the flashback, like, you didn't even see his character, really.
Yeah, like you know, you had no idea he was like, hiding there. And shout out to Channing Tatum. I fell down a YouTube hole watching a whole bunch of these celebrity lip-sync battles with LL Cool J. And Channing Tatum versus his wife is freaking hilarious. Because, I mean, he does that freaking Frozen song, and he does like a Beyonce song, and he's dressed like full on like Beyonce while he's performing the song. It's insane.
That's one show I have not got into, but I don't know. Now it's for me, I wait on stuff to come out either on demand or Netflix, and
yeah, like
I avoid all commercials.
And another, I don't know if I'd call it a. He's not a bad guy, but he's plays a drug dealer. Formula 51. Have you seen that one?
I have not seen Formula 51.
It's excellent. He's a Scottish, or he claims he has Scottish descent, so he wears a kilt through the whole movie, because real men wear kilts. We know that. And it's him in like he's like an American guy in like an English thing where he's developed this new kind of super ecstasy that basically, if you test it, it shows as it's not, it can basically pass all drug tests, so people can't detect that it is a drug, but it's supposed to have, like, the effects of, like, ecstasy times 10. So all these drug dealers are trying to get this formula from him, and he's trying to, like, just basically sell it for $1 billion so he can buy a castle in Scotland and become Scottish. It's just the bad guy in the movie, the drug dealer that he ripped off that's trying to track him down, is Meatloaf.
Yes. Meatloaf. I don't know.
But yeah, anytime
people say Meatloaf, two things come to mind. One, Bat Out of Hell. Then two, Rocky Horror Picture Show.
But there's one scene in there where these... they're basically like soccer hooligan skinhead gang guys capture him, and they're like, you gotta cook us this drug. He's like, all right, I'll give you the drug, but he changes the formula, so basically it's a super laxative. So when these guys take the ecstasy thinking they're gonna get high, they just basically shit themselves to death. It's freaking hilarious. Oh yeah, don't mess with Sam Jackson. Yeah, he's a bad chemist too.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, talking about some of his other roles where he wasn't necessarily a bad guy was, when he plays Agent Gibbons in XXX.
Yeah, I mean, they're supposed to be bringing that back as well, because, I mean, so far in each movie we've had a different, kind of like a different style of movie, where the first one was kind of like James Bond mixed with Action Star, or Fast and the Furious. But he's been like the CIA agent or agent of some kind of secret government organization that saves the world. But yeah, so we'll be bringing that back too with, I think Vin Diesel's coming back for that. But yeah, the second one with him and Ice Cube is freaking awesome. Because the first one, he's just kind of like the boss that sends people out to all missions. But in the second one, he's got like a lot bigger role where you actually get to see him, in some action stuff. It's like that one scene where they're talking and Ice Cube's like, wars come and go, but my soldiers stay eternal. And he's like, that's nice. Who said that, Patton? He's like, nah, it's Tupac. Yes.
That's freaking awesome.
And then later, because there's a whole plot to kill the president, and later on the president's like giving a speech after Ice Cube has saved him, and he quotes that again. And I'm like, did the president just quote Tupac?
Got my vote.
And he's also... made a career of playing badass cops too. I mean, he was in the remake of Shaft playing you know, with another one of his famous line, "It's my duty to please that booty." We all know Shaft's a bad mother. Shut your mouth. What? Just talking about Shaft?
Yes.
And then playing Danny Roman in The Negotiator, which is probably one of my favorite movies where him, and he's basically a police hostage negotiator that gets framed for killing his partner because they kind of accidentally uncover some kind of conspiracy. So, I mean, he takes like all these people hostages in like the police headquarters, and they have to call in, what's his name? Lex Luthor.
I'm trying to remember.
I can't, but he's like another famous negotiator, but he's from a different precinct. So he's pretty sure this guy's far enough away to not be part of the conspiracy. And then those two just kind of playing, Kevin Spacek playing mind games back and forth. Cause I mean, he's trying to negotiate this hostage situation, but he's dealing with somebody who is, you know, a top line trained negotiator himself. So he knows like all the tricks that he's going to try to pull to end the situation. And it's just a badass movie.
I was just looking here. I got distracted. You brought up Tupac. And so like, I didn't realize how many rappers that Samuel L. Jackson had played alongside, including Tupac in Juice, Queen Latifah, and Method Man, LL Cool J, Busta Rhymes, Eve, Ice Cube, Exhibit, David Banner. Like,
yeah, LL was in Deep Blue Sea. Yeah, of course, Ice Cube was in the last Triple X movie.
Yeah, Busta Rhymes in Shaft. Ice Cube, yeah. State of the Union, Exhibit in State of the Union, and David Banner, and you know,
Exhibit being in there.
Black Snake Moon, and then 50 Cent in Home of the Brave.
I don't think I've seen that one. But speaking of his cop roles, one of my favorite more recent movie is the remake of, well, it was a movie based on a old TV show, SWAT. Him playing the character of Sergeant Hondo, the leader of the SWAT team.
I thoroughly enjoyed the movie SWAT. I talked to a lot of people that didn't really care for it all that much, but I thought it was a great movie.
Oh, man, I'd go back and watch it. I watched it again the other day just when I was thinking about
Sam. I feel like every time I see it on, you know, freaking HBO or a Showtime or something, like, it's one of those films that I'm like, ah, shit. And yeah. Stop and watch it, fire up a cigar, and...
I mean, yeah, even the tagline, you know, SWAT, because even cops dial 911. And yeah, and based on another one with LL Cool J is one of the guys on his SWAT team, and Colin Farrell too. I mean, that movie is so awesome, just the action sequences in it, and such a badass soundtrack. A lot of like old rock and roll, especially like the training montages of them like in SWAT school, yeah. Like playing like Rolling Stone songs and stuff. Oh, and yeah, just and there were so many like cameos to that original show too, because a lot of the, like the original Hondo is the guy who drives their SWAT bus, and LL Cool J's character's father is the guy, the original guy who played LL Cool J's character in the SWAT TV show. I mean, there was like all these little references to that old show, but yeah, that was, I mean, as far as a cop action movie, that's probably one of my favorite movies with Sam Jackson in it.
I was just looking at some future stuff, and it looks like he is set to produce a live action movie of Afro Samurai, and then also star in Kong Skull Island, which comes out in 2017. So that's gonna be interesting. Yeah, you know, freaking giant monster.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. You know, Sam Jackson, not only is he a great comedy and drama actor, he's done a lot of voiceover stuff too. He's you know, like I said, he's done characters in video games. He was in Grand Theft Auto San Andreas as like a kind of like a dirty cop. He also did a voice in the Incredibles movie for what was that Pixar or whatever.
Yep.
About, you know, superheroes and stuff. He played kind of like the flat. He was like the stretching guy, I think it was. Is the stretching guy or the fat guy? I forget. It's been so long since I've seen that movie. I don't remember what his actual powers were, but yeah, he was one of the heroes. Lucius Best as Frozone. Ah, he was the ice guy.
Yeah, I don't know. One that comes to mind that always stood out is the Boondocks, where he plays Gin Rummy.
That's an interesting show too.
Yes.
Oh, but yeah, he's in Afro Samurai too, as like the his version of a Japanese like samurai movie.
Yeah, apparently he's hosted the MTV Awards, Spike TV Video Game Awards, and he actually, this is interesting. So there was the Bible Experience, the New Testament audio book version of the Bible. He is the voice of God. So check that up for a good guy role if you so deem.
He voiced Mace Windu in the animated Star Wars Clone Wars movie. He voiced him in the Star Wars Lego video game. Like I said, he's kind of done a little of everything.
I found an audiobook that he voiced that you have to find.
Go to sleep.
No, it is Go the Fuck to Sleep.
Yes. Oh yeah, that is absolutely hilarious. And he also did voiced Black Dynamite in the Black Dynamite animated series. Or no, he was he didn't voice Black Dynamite, but he voiced a character in that series as well. So yeah, he's done it all, and I can't believe I forgot about it. The Long Kiss Goodnight was it Mitch Hennessy, the Private Eye.
Well, I mean, as much as we've talked about Tarantino, one film that didn't come up was Inglourious Basterds,
which I didn't realize he was in there. But yeah, he does like a narration.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a main role, but he definitely has some speaking roles and stuff in the film. So I thought that was a great film too, by the way. Just throwing it out there.
Oh yeah, that was a good one. So out of all the roles, what is your favorite Sam Jackson moment?
I don't know. It'd have to be from Pulp Fiction. Like when I think of Sam Jackson, Pulp Fiction's what comes to mind, and the character Jules Verne. And as copy as it seems, the freaking diner scene, because that scene, when it aired, I was up out of my seat saying, yeah, motherfucker, yeah, what now?
Oh, yeah, I mean, if you take Pulp Fiction out of the mix, it would have to be either Hondo from SWAT or Nick Fury. I mean, those are probably some of the best Sam Jackson moments.
If you were to ask me outside of Pulp Fiction, I would say Nick Fury. I mean, because when I think Nick Fury, I got into some of the Marvel comics and all that stuff late. So I've always known Nick Fury to be...
I mean, even when I read the comics now, it's like I'm reading it in Sam Jackson's voice because it's so... When you read Batman, it's Tim Conroy's or Kevin Conroy's voice. One thing I completely forgot about the other guys, speaking of cop roles... him and The Rock as like the ultimate cops.
I don't think I've seen that.
Oh, it's supposed to be kind of like a buddy cop movie where Will Ferrell and Marky Mark are like the two loser cops that and basically they're Sam Jackson and The Rock are the big badasses that everybody loves at the station. And like, they're like big heroes and stuff. I mean, that's where that one line comes from where like they just come off a mission. Everybody's like applauding them. And Will Ferrell's like, good job, guys. He's like, hey, shut the fuck up. If I want to hear you speak, I will stick my hand up your ass and work your mouth like a puppet. But those two guys end up getting killed in like the most ridiculous way because they're chasing a guy and the guy like jumps off a building with a parachute and they're like, we can make it. Just aim for the bushes. And they, of course, they miss the bushes and die. So now it's up to the two loser cops to solve the case because the heroes are dead.
How old is that film?
It's not that old. It came out, let me see here.
What, in the neighborhood of like 2008 or something? Or
yeah, it's like mid 2010.
So 2010? Yeah, I mean, that's just two monsters of actors side by side.
And they're like gone in the first like 20 minutes of the movie.
Samuel L. Jackson, like
yeah, those two are the partner. Like I want to see the full movie of those two guys. It's like the action buddy cop film. But as we kind of wrap it up here, what are your final thoughts of the cigar? Has it grown on you any?
You ask that as I'm in the process of just touching it up. You know, it has, honestly. It took to get about halfway through it before it started developing some of the complexity, and then some of the spice notes came out of it. Still very woody, still very nutty. I think mainly the thing for me is this isn't the wrapper. You know, I need something, you know, with, like if I had the Habano wrapper or something that had just that touch of spice, that's what I'm missing for my taste.
Yeah, I think you need to try the original or the Maduro, because I really enjoyed the Maduro, complexity and pepper, the sweetness of the Maduro wrapper and like the coffee and cocoa notes, blend together a lot better than, the way you're describing the natural.
Yeah, I mean, this is a, if it was summer and I'm out sitting by the barbecue, and this is a warm weather cigar, I think, for me. Like, sometimes in the hotter months, like, I don't necessarily want all the spiciness. Not that I don't like it or, don't enjoy it, but, this is something that, hey, I'm going to be out in the grill for just, an hour or so, and I would opt for it then in that environment, I think. But it being cooler, I want something a little bit warm on the mouth. Whereas this is definitely more of a an airy and less complex smoke. So I don't know. I mean, some people may really, really enjoy this cigar. That is not going to like a lot of the cigars that we reviewed, because they are in your face, bold, they're complex. So some people's taste buds, palates may not be apt for that. So that's my thought. Still not my favorite, but I haven't lit it and, just said, nope, I'm not going to touch it again, and went and grabbed another cigar out of the humidor. So,
yeah, I mean, I got to say, I'd recommend the Maduro. It's, It's got some good complexity and balance to it, and it does have, some strength, and but also a lot of flavor. I don't know if it's one that'll go into my regular rotation or not, but it's definitely a good every once in a while smoke. I definitely recommend to try it.
Yeah, and this may be a a cigar that is not as well paired with a beer. Maybe this is something that I should try to pair with a bourbon, a scotch, something that the alcohol can bring some of the additional notes and flavors that I'm looking for that the cigar doesn't have. So, this might be just the wrong pairing for this type of cigar.
All right. With that, we'll wrap things up and be right back.
Stay tuned, folks. Party started rocking, came and knock on the door. They came in blazing, waving guns and yelling, drop on the floor. This is a rivalry, we want some Jewett, Wallace and Doe. We're burglars, not murderers, but if we gotta be both, it's not a problem, cause we brought the semi-autos with the hollow tips. I promise not to cause a fit as long as we get all your shit. Now folks, I hope we understand one another. So I handed him my wallet, it said, bad motherfucker. He's a bad motherfucker.
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back to the podcast. It's Beer 30.
Yeah, we got a delicious treat today out of from Humboldt Brewing, Black Xantus Imperial Stout. This is a definitely a full-bodied, very complex. Interesting that, this beer is actually barrel aged for 6 months in a combination of bourbon and retired Firestone Union and wine barrels, and infused with some fair trade organic coffee.
Wow, that sounds like some hippie stuff right there.
Yeah, like I don't know, like we might be borderline hipstering it right now. Like
organic coffee from a local roaster, Jobella.
Yeah, that's what we'll go with. But I got to say, this is a very interesting beer. You know, being an Imperial Stout, like, you know, it definitely has the warmth from the bourbon, but it definitely has that wine taste. Like, I don't know, like this is almost a mash between stout meets barley wine in a sense. Like, yeah, it's quite interesting.
This is like a Java Stout with that coffee infusion. So it's definitely got the coffee bitterness. But it also has that liquory, you know, barley wine flavor to it. So it's an interesting combination.
Yeah, I mean, this wasn't the cheapest of beers. And, you know, everywhere that I've seen, like, you know, this beer has won several major awards and I think was ranked, like, what was it, 94, 95, somewhere in that neighborhood? Like,
Got a 99 overall on Rate a Beer and a 92 on Beer Advocate. And it has won U.S. Beer Championship gold medal in 2013, bronze medal in 2014, and Denver International Beer Competition gold medal in 2014. So it is a award-winning beer.
Yeah, it's delicious. I mean, it's for it to be so, you know, full-bodied and everything, it's very well-balanced. You know, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's not the... If stouty is a description, it doesn't taste like most stouts, even Imperial stouts. It's very barley wine-ish, but yeah.
I mean, the coffee aroma and, you know, a hint of the flavor is there, but it's not what most people are going to think when, you know, they're drinking a traditional style stout, because traditionally you get a lot of the mochas and the Java flavors.
Yeah, I'm not getting a lot of chocolate, mainly that coffee. Yep. Taste, like coffee and bourbon,
which I don't know about you, but I mean, I like that switch. I mean,
gets you drunk and keeps you awake.
Well, I mean we finally got our first cold snap, so it feels like winter, so you know, this is a great cold weather brew.
Definitely. I mean, these are an 11% beer, so it's going to keep you warm or make you so don't care that it's cold.
Absolutely. So I don't know, you know, for me, I think I'm at a 4.5 on this beer.
Yeah, I'd say I would agree on our Untappd app. You know, go follow us on Untappd so you can see what we're drinking each week.
Yep, when we remember to log the shit because we're slackers.
Hey Brad, log this beer.
Hey, it's a new year, we'll get better. There's room for improvement.
That's what you said last year.
Hey, at least we started podcasting, right?
That's true. And we know we're internationally known now. So, yeah.
Word?
We accomplished something in 2015. So, just hopefully we'll accomplish a little bit more in 2016.
Absolutely.
And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
Hello. My name is Jay Patrick, and that is Adam.
Hello.
Join us for the Adam and JP Show.
Hello.
Available on iTunes and Stitcher Radio.
Hello.
Get it now.
Hello.
Oh, we're just kidding. If you love comics, video games, movies, wrestling.
Who doesn't? These are all great things that make us who we are.
That's true. Then you should join us for the Adam and JP Show. You actually can get it on iTunes and Stitcher Radio.
Yeah, that part was true.
And right here on the ESO Network.
And adamandjp.com.
And welcome back. It's time for some science. Yeah, not that we've done that in a while, so.
I know, man. After these last couple of episodes, like, it's got my rhythm all skewed. Like,
yeah, with all these interviews and special editions and stuff, it's like, yeah. But at least, yeah, it gave us time for some news to, you know, build up. And one of the things that happened this week is the CES show in Las Vegas, the Consumer Electronics Show, which always has, you know, the baddest and greatest in the new high-tech world.
Not always the greatest.
I mean, one of the things that we've that came out, a lot of Chinese stuff this time around. that I'm looking forward to. We've talked about drones and stuff in the past. Well, now a Chinese manufacturing company, Yihang Inc., has unveiled a drone you can ride in. It's like big enough to carry a humans. It's 18 feet long, has like a little cockpit thing, but then it's like basically your standard quad rotor just on a massive size scale.
Dude, that is awesome. Like, I love the caption on the photo that says it even comes with a reading light. But no, I mean, this might be revolutionary. I mean, you know, a thousand horsepower engine, you know, 0 to 60.
No, that's the car. I'm talking about the drone.
Yeah,
we'll talk about the car in a second. But yeah, I mean, it's saying it can go 100 kilometers an hour. It's just kind of. I hope that you can being inside of it, you're actually controlling it, because I would not want to ride this thing while someone else is controlling it by a remote control.
No, I mean,
that would get a little sketchy.
I don't. You just better hope that your remote is charged, or the controls are built in, or something like that. Because having 3%, control life, probably not going to be good if you're X number of feet off the ground. But I mean, I'm just wondering, like, could this potentially revolutionize, you know, the way we think about travel and eliminating, you know, traffic and stuff? Yeah, I mean, this may be for the upper echelon, but you wouldn't need a space as big as flying a full-sized helicopter or something.
And like, the controls on it, too. If this is, you know, truly a drone, it shouldn't be any more difficult than flying your regular quadcopter. It's just on a big scale. I mean, this is truly the closest thing we've seen so far to actual flying cars.
Yep. So I don't know. I would be curious. I don't know. You know, the other aspect of driving that has really intrigued me is, the push for the self-driving cars and where that technology is evolving to.
And, you know, it's also whether or not this is considered an aircraft, you know, that's something you would need to have a pilot's license to fly, because it's definitely not, you know, going to be controlled like a helicopter. It seems to be controlled like a drone. So it's,
I feel like you would need some sort of licensing system or something. I mean, you can't just have somebody inexperienced and, you know, fall out of the sky on a freeway. Like, that can't happen.
I mean, it can happen quite easily.
Well, I mean, yeah, it could very easily happen. I mean,
hopefully you at least have insurance on these things.
But, I mean, there would have to be some kind of, you know, check balance, a licensing system, maybe even a training, you know, maybe like a learner's type thing, right? Like you have set aside airspace or something like that for training purposes. And after, you know.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be some regulation on these things when they get into the market. Flight.
Like, I don't know, man. I'd be curious. Like you said, it's the closest thing we have to flying cars. And it's always funny watching films about the future and the technology. And like, we're nowhere near that.
Another big thing that was released at CES is a company, Faraday Future, another Chinese company that's basically developing at least part-time electric supercar. They call it the FF01, which kind of reminds of the old F-Zero game you play. And this thing looks like something straight out of the future. It kind of looks like a Batmobile, but it's an electric car, also a self-driving car, and has a 1,000 horsepower engine, so this thing is going to be nasty. It's like, you know, they're kind of China's first attempt at getting into the supercar market.
I don't know. Definitely interesting as far as the concept. I mean, I'm looking, and I mean, the look very much feels like the Batmobile. Like, I mean, I think the Dark Knight would approve.
And another thing that was shown was a kind of a Knight Rider-esque voice command watch, which has been developed between a Swedish car maker, Volvo, and Microsoft. And it's basically kind of like your Apple Watch or whatever. But now you can kind of control your car with a phone app, but this would like eliminate having to use a phone app. You could literally talk into this wristband, tell your car to turn on its heating, honk its horns, unlock the window, even set, you know, your navigation, so when you get into the car, all that stuff's already ready to go, and you know, you don't have to program anything in. You can just speak into your watch, and you're good to go.
I mean, cars are definitely becoming more and more connected. And I'm surprised that, you know, Apple and, you know, other people haven't already partnered with manufacturers to come up with more voice-driven, hands-free, minimized distraction. In fact, I was on a road trip earlier this week, and I was in the first vehicle that actually had the heads-up display. So it projects the...
You haven't seen that in a while. I mean, I know Oldsmobile was kind of experimenting with that. Like, some of the old Cutlasses had the...
and I was like,
at least a speedometer on a heads-up display. But
I mean, this one had the speedometer, the GPS, the whole, you know, readout. Nice. And it was just awesome, like... For somebody like me that, you know, when I've got the GPS programmed in the car, I find myself kind of having to glance over, or if I'm using the Waze app or something like that, I'm once again having to take my eyes off the road. And I'm like, you know, we get a combination of that with voice activated, and as technology evolves and expands, it's going to become more and more consumer friendly. So it's not just going to be the upper echelon luxury markets that are going to benefit from this. So
another cool thing that that we saw too at CES was a LG, not an actual TV, but it's kind of a proof of concept thing, is a roll-up digital screen. It's uses, they're calling OLED, organic light emitting diode technology, which is self-illuminating. It does not require another screen to, you know, project light onto. And basically this 18-inch display, they could roll it up like a piece of paper into like a 3-centimeter tube. So, I mean, that's kind of going to be cool for, you know, hell, portable gaming. I mean, if you can roll up your 32 or 60-inch screen, stick it in your backpack, you know, go over and unroll it and plug in your PlayStation, you're good to go.
How many of the gaming tables have we looked at, and they all have like the cutout for you to paste your, or, you know, like a plexiglass thing to set over your game board to keep liquids and stuff off of it? Like, imagine able to roll this out.
Yeah, roll out a video screen, and then you don't even have to have a board. You could just project a picture of whatever game board you were wanting to play, or, you know, without having to, you know, switch out a whole bunch of games. Just like I said, you could just kind of switch out the boards via this TV screen. I mean, it's definitely got some cool cool options. And in other science-y news, as we move away from CES.
Oh, we're not going to talk about the humanoid robots and, you know, the butlers and all that stuff that came out. Like, there's just so much cool stuff. Like, I don't know. I mean, there's so much there.
I did see there is a sensor. They call it the Sensor Awake, which is the world's first olfactory alarm clock. So it basically can wake you up with smell. So like, you know, so your alarm clock make you smell coffee or whatever, or, you know, put in a fart thing in there, because, you know, a good fart can wake you up in the middle of the night.
I mean, just let your CPAP catch a little whiff of that.
No bueno. But anyway, you know how I love guns. This right here, I thought was
no clue. Really,
a cool concept. We've talked before about the meteorite sword that someone made in Japan. Well, a gun maker has plans to make a pistol set from a 4-billion-year-old meteorite.
Yeah, just and I'm assuming these are just concept images of the pistol, but
yeah, they're basically using that same meteorite that they made the sword out of, the Gibeon meteorite. They've basically acquired about a 77-pound piece, and let me see what company is this? But yeah, they're basically going to Cabot guns. Are building two 1911 style firearms out of materials from this meteorite. And, you know, if you want to buy the set, their estimated price is going to be about, you know, $1 million for the pair of pistols. So, I mean, it's only $1 million for a space gun.
I hope you have dreams of hitting that Powerball.
Oh yeah. Dude, I mean, if I hit that Powerball, yeah, I'm going to be the top bidder on this shit. So I'd be like the only person in the world with freaking dual wielding meteor guns.
So
how badass would that be?
From a technical standpoint and a practicality standpoint, like weight, you know, performance of the weapon and everything else, like is anything enhanced being from the meteorite, or, you know,
it's, yeah, I mean, the meteorite's mainly, you know, iron ore and stuff, so it's, you know, not unlike, you know, other metals, But, you know, they say there are some, you know, difficulties. It's not the most optimum material for firearms. So a lot of technical matters have been overcome to construct these pistols. And, you know, they're having to use advanced aerospace technologies to make these things functional. But, I mean, just how badass would it be to have meteor guns?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, definitely interesting. I mean, it's... I feel like it's an ego piece and a bragging right, ultimately.
Exactly.
Like, more than a practical. And
like, I don't know how much shooting these things I want to do, especially if I spend $1 million on them, but they would look really awesome in my collection.
I mean, that's kind of where I'm at. Like, as a display piece, okay, yeah, cool. But at the end of the day, I love guns for the fact of being able to get out and shoot and actually put them to use. Whereas this, I wouldn't touch it. Like, it would go in a safety box somewhere. Like,
you need guns to protect your other gun. Yeah, I think it's gonna have to have a serious serious security for the guns. Another thing that was kind of be cool. I know you bitched about the fake hoverboards that have.
I don't even want to. They don't even hover. They roll. Like, how the fuck do people call these a hoverboard? It's a rolly board.
Well, someone is making an actual hoverboard. It's called the Arca board, and basically, it's almost like another drone. It's you know, the current, you know, their whatever concept version is like, it's a big square box thing, but has like something like 30 different, you know, fans. So it's basically built kind of like a...
Yeah, because it's a Hendo hoverboard that's powered by electromagnetic...
Yes, we've talked about that. Yeah, this Arca hoverboard, you know, actually operates on a whole bunch of, you know, little induction fans, kind of like a drone would. But, yeah, 36 fans.
Like, I just feel like the slightest movement in the wrong direction, though, being fan-driven, you're going to bust that butt.
Yeah, I don't know how it's going to steer, if it's just kind of like you lean almost like a... You know, like some of the toy, you know, like the, you know, like some like the, whatchamacallit, the current toy hoverboards or whatever.
Yeah, that well, kinda... it states in the article that one of the biggest cons is the low stability, but there is an internal stabilization mechanism that basically you can control with your smartphone. So
yeah, but currently it only has like about a 6-minute flight time, but, and it's probably going to cost about $20,000. So it's not something for the, at least not the first generation, is definitely not something cheap. But, you know, maybe as
nothing
the technology
is. I mean, it's
going to
progress. It's going to get better.
Get down to a consumer level product. Because, I mean, because right now,
at some point, I do want a true hoverboard.
So maybe another couple of years it'll get down to where it's feasible. And finally, since we talked about meteors, we got a little space news here. The European Space Agency plans to build a moon village by 2030.
This thing looks like some kind of like either Envirodome or a bunch of igloos with glass tops.
Biodome with Polyshore?
Yeah, something like that. So, I don't know. Like, I mean, do they hope to be able to sustain life on the village, or is it just a place that... Oh, well, now you basically have a campground for the, you know, astronauts that are traveling to the moon, so...
Well, one thing, it's going to be a place for scientific experiments and whatnot, but also eventually it could be a launching pad for further space exploration, because one of the problems with, you know, launching spacecraft from Earth is escaping Earth's gravity and atmosphere, but if you could build a spaceship on the moon where there is no atmosphere... It's going to be a lot easier to launch vehicles from there. And they're saying this whole pod and stuff is going to be built, basically 3D printed directly on the moon. So instead of having to move all this construction stuff up there, they move some robots and some basically industrial size 3D printers, and, you know, everything can kind of be built on site with these, you know, basically automatons and 3D printers.
You know, I was in Barnes & Noble the other day, and they actually had a 3D printer there for sale. And I thought that was interesting. Like, it's crazy the places that 3D printers are starting to pop up now.
Yeah, and they have, like, huge 3D... like, there's... I've seen them. There's a... I forgot where it's at, but basically, they've got a 3D printer they use for construction. So they're, like, you know, 3D printing bridges and stuff. And I've seen basically like a large, like they could scan a room and like 3D print a crime scene. So basically, you know, if it's, you know, you can actually recreate a scene years later from the scans made of your scene then, and just basically 3D print a copy of whatever, you know, a whole room, basically, to you know, it's kind of a cool concept.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. I'm wondering what that does for the construction industry, you know, as far as like housing and stuff like that's concerned.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, if we could 3D print a whole building, then that's probably going to cut down on construction costs and time as well. I mean, we're 3D printing cars now, so, you know, buildings can't be that much harder. Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's definitely interesting to see where time has, you know, is going. So,
and with that, we will wrap this up and be back with the next segment.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News. It's kind of weird that we're doing this segment. Like, I feel like we missed out on it for like a month straight. Maybe it hasn't been that long, but it feels that way.
Yeah, I know. I haven't done science in a while, so get a little rusty.
Yep. So we'll go ahead, jump right into it. Up next for me, something I'm super excited and looking forward to is the Marvel Netflix release of Daredevil Season 2.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was absolutely suckered into Daredevil, and I'm looking forward to the additions of more characters as, you know, the series progresses.
Yeah, I can't wait to see Punisher.
Yep. Did you have a chance to take a look at this new teaser trailer they released for this?
No, I haven't
seen that. So, really, it doesn't show any new footage or anything else like that. It's all from Season 1, but the way that it's shot almost kind of has that Sin City style look and feel to it. Like, it just looks really awesome. Like, almost like you're, you know, being, I don't know, like they are narrating a comic book, like if you were filming a comic strip. Yeah. Like, it, just really cool how they did that. So this is set to drop March 18th. So,
hell yeah.
Be a nice little birthday surprise. Yeah. It's kind of right in the middle for us.
Yeah, I didn't even know if it was coming up that soon.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. And, I mean, this is just 1 week, you know, before Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice. So,
Dawn of Justice.
Yeah, we'll that's another tangent for another day. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm super stoked about it.
I'd rather watch that than Superman versus Batman. So.
All day, every day.
Yeah.
So speaking of, Netflix, CBS, I mean, I've been a big fan of the stuff that CW has done, you know, with iZombie, with, you know, Flash and Arrow, and I've enjoyed checking this stuff up, on Netflix. Like, it's been awesome to be able to kind of binge watch without the commercial interruption and all these other things.
That's how I finally got into iZombie. Was I didn't watch it when it first came out, but then I watched all of Season 1 when it was uploaded, and pretty much that's how I didn't see the first season of Arrow. I ended up watching it on Netflix later, and then after that I was hooked and have been watching it ever since.
Yeah, I mean, so Business Insider, I mean, I'm sure there's still room for contract negotiation, renewals, and everything else, but, you know, currently the way it stands right now, it looks like CBS is planning on pulling up CW. Well,
CBS, I think, is a different company.
Well, CBS is the owner of CW.
Ah.
And they're planning on pulling the CW shows off of Netflix when their contract is up in order to launch their own streaming service. Like, the way that it's said is,
yeah, because that's where that new Star Trek series is going to be. Yep. Supposed to be on their new streaming service.
Yep. So basically, you know, the network is thinking about coming up with a CW app that people can subscribe to for a couple bucks a month and still get, you know, the full CW lineup of shows. But I don't know.
That's the problem with all these freaking, you know, I like the fact that you may not need to have cable anymore, that you can get the individual stuff. But at a certain point, if you have to subscribe to five or six different providers to get everything you want, you're going to be back to paying the $150 that you're paying for cable now. So it kind of, there's a diminishing returns aspect.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. You know, with Netflix, you get so much great content for one price. And, you know, I feel like now the TV networks are starting to catch on and, you know, they're offering the on-demand and some, you know, real-time streaming and things of that nature. But
Netflix, Hulu, ABC, CBS, like, you know, if I have to subscribe to each network individually, it's going to eventually get to be cost prohibitive.
Yeah, I don't know. I personally feel like if, you know, they were to pull the CW shows off of Netflix, I think it would hurt the franchise.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I don't think I would have given iZombie the chance. And I genuinely liked the show once I got into watching it. So, I don't know. I mean, just one of those things. Saturday, you're bored of shit. Oh, I'll give this a try. And I wouldn't have done that any other way. So, you know, since we spoke of, you know, CW and stuff like that, did you see this video of Kevin Smith?
Oh, crying over the finale over the Flash?
Yeah.
That dude needs to cut back on the weed. He's getting a little emotional these days.
Yeah, well, I thought it was interesting, you know, that basically Kevin Smith will now be directing an episode of The Flash this coming up
that'll
season.
That'll be interesting to see what he comes up with for Flash.
Well, I mean, I you know, he is obviously very emotionally invested into the series. I mean,
I think he's going to do an excellent job, but it's, I know he's like in the past said he didn't want to do any kind of like comic book movie because he said he just don't think he can direct big action sequences. Yeah. So maybe if he does this, it'll give him over that fear of directing a comic book thing. And who knows, we could actually get maybe an actual comic book movie out of Kevin Smith at some point.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, his writing as far as some of the stuff for Daredevil and Batman and the Green Arrow, like, I've loved his writing. Like, you know, like you said, maybe this might be that little bit of a push and, you know, maybe he partners up with some people and says, hey, you know, maybe you don't take it all on your own, but surround yourself with a team of people that can help you, you know.
If you got a good, like, you know, second, you know, AD something just to cover the action stuff, then I mean, because originally he was supposed to direct the Green Hornet movie, but then he decided it was just too much, that he was too chicken to to do it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. So I'm really curious to see you know, how it plays out, and this might be a big stepping stone, because I think I'd like to see Kevin Smith, you know, do some comic book stuff. I mean, he's certainly got the passion, the knowledge, and everything else. And I think with the right team, it could be very, very successful for him.
Get him out of these weird Canadian horror movies and back into some more mainstream stuff.
I mean, which, as fucked up as, you know, some of the horror stuff is, I mean, it's great. I mean, And it's cool, too, because it's an homage to the fans and the followers of the podcast and everything of that nature.
I was just thinking of Kevin Smith's version of, like, Justice League. They're all just hanging out in the Watchtower, just, like, talking shit like Randall and Dante. They never actually go out and fight anybody. They just sit around bitching all day.
If they have a photo face, it's because the weed was bad.
Lex Luthor gets stink palmed.
Oh, that'd be awesome. So, reboots. I'm about sick of rebooted movies, and I caught wind reading some stuff on the net that M. Night Shyamalan is basically going to be rebooting Tales from the Crypt for a TNT TV series.
Like, I originally was excited when I heard it was coming back, but then I'm like,
I just wonder what the twist is going to be.
Like, after The Sixth Sense, like, every other movie he's made has just, like, been horrible to me anyway. And also the fact that apparently the Crypt Keeper as we know him will not be returning, because that's the thing that's owned exclusively by HBO. It's going to be more of the Crypt Keeper from the comic books, which is just kind of like an old man.
Old man in a hood with a cane.
And that's, I don't think that's going to work, because that's what made Tales from the Crypt watchable, was the little freaking, you know, bookend segments of the Crypt Keeper and his, like, cheesy ass puns and jokes. I mean, that, like, so that kind of, you know, wrapping the horror in, like, comedy, you know, made that show as awesome as it was. So I'm I don't know. I'm kind of cautious on this one. I'm like, I want it to be cool, but I'm like, there's no Crypt Keeper. It's not going to be the same.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm curious to see how they do the show lineups, because from what I've read, basically it's going to be a 2 hour, and they're kind of going to go to the direction of American Horror Story, like,
which I've never seen any.
Yeah,
of that.
Like, you know,
yeah, it's going to be a much darker series.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like the short, you know, segments, and I just don't know that it's going to have the and who knows, you know, they're saying old man with a hood and a cane, and the twist is going to be it's some, like, 12-year-old Caucasian boy that's mental. Like, that's going to be the twist.
Like, if the old man just pulls, like, the mask off and it's the freaking real Crypt Keeper underneath, then I'm like, all right, that's a twist I can get behind.
Yes. So, I don't know. Maybe he can pull some weight with HBO or something like that, and, you know, be like, can I just borrow the Crypt Keeper for just this?
Like, maybe this will suck so hard it'll motivate, like, HBO to bring back the real Crypt Keeper and you know, give us some new Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
Tales from the Crypt.
I just love the Crypt Keeper's laugh, too. Like, when you set your freaking ringtone as a Crypt Keeper's laugh, that show.
Oh, I had to change it because it kept scaring the shit out of me. I forgot it was there.
I could see how in the middle of the night somebody texts or calls and you get that laugh, like, especially if you're in, like, half asleep state or something like that. Yeah, that'd get my...
Come out of the bed with the fists up, like, what the hell was that?
So, in other news, Michael Bay is going to be directing Transformers 5.
That could go either way. Did he even direct? No, he didn't direct the last one. He just produced the last
one. Yeah, I think he produced it. So,
and that was the weird, probably the... It was, I mean, it was decent, but it was definitely different from the previous Transformers movies. But, yeah, I mean, hell, okay, as much people as shit as people give Michael Bay, I've not been entirely...
Disappointed
by the... I mean, it's what you get. It's a freaking popcorn movie of huge special effects and explosions, but I mean, it's not, you know, something, you know, Oscar worthy, but it's going to entertain you for a for an evening.
Yeah.
And, like, from what we've seen of the new Ninja Turtles movie, I mean, Michael Bay's, you know, bringing it. I mean, for at least from the trailer, the new Ninja Turtle movies look,
yeah,
like,
and
I
really hope that we haven't just seen all of the key highlights in the trailer and just to rally fans around it, and then the rest of the film just...
Man, it had everything I wanted it to have, so I'm definitely going to give that one a shot. I'm not going to wait to video like I did with the first one.
Yeah, so I don't know. You know, Transformers 5, we're going to have the Iron Man screenwriters, Art McCarum and Matt Holloway and Black Hawk Down's Ken Nolan working on the script. And
I mean, that sounds pretty badass.
Yeah, and once again, it's going to star Mark Wahlberg, so...
I think we got a Transformer.
Yeah. So, I don't know. You know, I mean, I've seen all the other films, and I'm with you. I wasn't terribly disappointed. I mean, after the first film, definitely the second, like, you know, with Michael Bay, what you're going to get out of a Michael Bay film. Yeah. So, if you go into it with that expectation, I'm not going to hate on the guy too much, so... You know, if J.J. Abrams is, you know, basically telling Michael Bay that you're the only guy that could do this, then, you know what? I'll give it a shot. Maybe I won't go see it in theaters.
Oh, I just keep thinking of that epic rap battle with Michael Bay in it.
Yes.
It's like, motherfucking explosions.
360 camera panoramic views and... So we're going to switch gears a little bit, talk a little bit about some video games. I can't seem to find myself not talking about Mortal Kombat X for some reason. And, you know, I guess
the
maybe...
porn parody Mortal Kombat XXX. I'm sure it's out there.
That's almost as bad as that.
Finisher!
Triple X BMX game they came out with.
Oh, where you earned, like, money and then you had to go spend it at a strip club in the game.
So, yeah, that was... But anyway, like, our Combat Pack 2, we're going to get some new characters, and...
I want to play Bo Racho again, the Drunken Master.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are, you know, hating that, you know, Bo Racho is making an appearance again, but I don't know. I mean, dude, that's your character, the projectile vomiting, the flatulence, the...
I mean, he's my spirit animal.
y'all got something. But, you know, then we got Alien, we got Leatherface, and the passing of, you know, Gunnar Hansen. I think that's going to be awesome to have a Leatherface.
Jason versus Leatherface, or freaking Alien versus Predator.
Like, I almost
I've got to get a new system.
I almost wish they would do, like, a horror combat pack. Like, could you imagine playing, like, Chucky, Michael Myers?
Because they've all already had Freddy in, like, the previous game, so Jason, Freddy, Leatherface. I mean, that's all we need is, like, I mean, Michael Myers and Jason's almost the same damn character.
But, I mean, it would be awesome, you know, to, a battle of the, you know, horror greats. But, yeah, also, too, we're going to get the Triborg, which contains, you know, Sektor, Cyrax, Smoke, and it really kind of depends. So this character is going to basically be three rolled up into one. So kind of curious to see how that is.
Interesting.
But, I mean, yeah. I mean, the fact that we can actually have, like,
the freaking, I remember whatever Cyrax's little laser net thing was, used to piss me off.
Yes. And a little thing that I ran across earlier today that I thought was cool. Being an Amazon Prime subscriber, I like the fact that I get the free 2-day shipping on so many Prime items, but I learned that there's a new perk that basically you get 20% off video game pre-orders and new releases up until 2 weeks after the release date. So, sweet. You know, kind of cool that get your hands on some of the latest games, get the 20% discount, and get it within a couple of days. Like, I think that's awesome. Like, no more waiting in line at a freaking GameStop at midnight or anything of that nature.
Yeah, I'm too old for that shit anyway. I was like, it'll be there in the morning.
Yeah, maybe. Depends on what the title is.
I mean, but if you pre-ordered it, you have a guaranteed copy. Like, you don't have to be there at midnight. You can still come pick it up in the morning.
Yeah, but all your friends have already played and got the double XP, and then you're stuck, you know, trying to play catch-up. And
yeah.
You got to plan for these things, man.
Yeah.
That's why we could never be successful at Twitch. That, and we probably don't look good in bikinis.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I think I can pull it off.
So that's really what I got. You got anything additional floating around out there?
Well, I do. As soon as I open, George Miller has said he's not doing any more Mad Max movies. Yeah, that's kind of surprising. You know, considering the success of Fury Road, you would expect, you know, the series to be, you know, reactivated, but he basically just says it takes so much time and effort to make a Mad Max film that it's just, he's getting old and he doesn't want to deal with it anymore.
I mean, I feel like there's a fine balance. I mean, especially if you've got family and things of that nature, like, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't even imagine the immense effort, the work, time, everything else involved in trying to produce.
Yeah, because basically, I mean, the weather, from what he's saying, you know, it took forever to get this, you know, Fury Road made. And even when they did, you know, they sometimes the weather didn't cooperate and stuff. And for them to have to go, you know, it's a 27-hour flight from America, so, you know, if they get over there, can't shoot.
It's not like you're getting
a
flight home, you know, and, oh, well, we'll just, you know, lay over for a day or so. Like,
yeah, he said he's not adverse to the idea of other directors making, like, you know, spinoffs set in the Mad Max universe, or, you know, potential, you know, turning it over to somebody else for some sequels. But he, as far as he is concerned, he is pretty much done with the franchise. So,
yeah, kind of bittersweet there. So,
yeah, I was looking forward to seeing another Mad Max after Fury Road, but who knows, another 10, 15 years or however long it was for us to get this one. Well, by the time we're old men, we'll see.
Yeah, what the
Mad
hell
Max.
Is with, you know, the good series? Like, I mean, you know, Force Awakens, how long did we wait? Like a decade, you know, in between the prequels and the new film. Then, you know, Mad Max. Golly, dude, we're going to be like in our 70s before we get another good movie.
Also, Billy Dee Williams has confirmed that he will be returning for one of the future Star Wars movies, so get to see Lando Calrissian again.
Hells yeah.
Also, speaking of the CW, the Legend of Tomorrow series, they've announced that Jonah Hex will be showing up at some point in the series. Jonah Hex has always been a badass. I mean, yes. He's like the supernatural cowboy of the DC universe. And now that there's a time travel element to this new series, then that kind of makes sense to that we'll.
Now that'd be a great segue into introducing see Hex
at some point.
Yep.
And with that, I think that about wraps us up. Don't forget to check us out on CigarNerdPodcast.com or on the ESO Network at ESOPodcast.com. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CigarNerdPod. Go pick up some cool shirts at our Zazzle store or RealMenSmokeCigars/CigarNerds. And with that, I'm tired of these motherfucking snakes on this motherfucking plane. Peace!
And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast with your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.